The forbidden lands of Treecko are being devoured by dark water. Only Agro, a young princess, can stop it by finding the lost 16 treasures of Dorman. At her side is an unlikely but loyal crew of misfits. The necrodancer, Matt, and the treasure hunter, not thief, Chris. At her back, the evil pirate queen, who will stop at nothing to get the treasures for herself. It's high adventure with the wanderers of dark water.
Oh, jeez.
Very captivating, wasn't it?
Pirates of dark water. Pirates of dark water, good way to start it off.
Well, we'll get to Pirates of Dark Water very shortly, but welcome to the first episode of the AgroCast in 2016. This is the January cast. We'll be talking about some television shows from our childhood, mostly cartoons. But let's start off before that really long discussion. Matt, what have you been up to lately?
Well, I've been up to shoveling snow. I've been up to shoveling snow.
Winter
seems in full effect. Thankfully, unlike the last 2 years, there's been some melt between the storms. Otherwise, we would have been completely buried. But yeah, winter's here. I'm not liking it, but we're getting through it. I mean, the cold never bothered me anyway. So
we'll never get away without a Frozen reference or something, will we?
As for what I've been up to, what I've been playing, most of what I've been playing is still Transformers Devastation for about half the month since we last recorded. I went through the game a couple more times to get the Platinum Trophy. I guess just to confirm what I said last time, the game's a bit short and the areas are repetitive, but the gameplay is really good, so I'd say fans of Transformers is the obvious target for it. I said it was a G1 game. Apparently it's Hasbro's Generations, but it has a G1 flavoring, so it's sort of like mixed content in that respect. Some of the Transformers have slight alterations from their original G1 looks, but it's all, you know, copacetic. It's all good, and it's a lot of fun. I kind of want a Beasties version of this. I kind of want a Beasties version of this. It'd be fucking awesome.
Maybe after it.
I'm happy that Platinum Games is doing the next Ninja Turtles game. It even has Rocksteady and Bebop in it, so I'm probably going to get their Ninja Turtles game as well, and then I hope they do something else that's all cartoon-based after that as well, because if they do Ninja Turtles well, then I'll be on board with, you know, anything they do. Maybe Platinum Games will do a Samurai Pizza Cats game. And it'd be the best Samurai Pizza Cats game since the Famicom game. And I think that's the only one, so if anyone could do a Platinum game, it's going to do it. Besides Transformers, I went back to EVO, The Search for Eden, one of my favorite games of all time. Did a challenge run of it to do the end game with a dinosaur rather than changing into a bird or a mammal or a human. I know humans are mammals, but they're a distinct category for winning the game. Winning the game as a four-legged dinosaur that can't really walk on ice is the hardest run in EVO. It wasn't that bad, but I loved the game, and I enjoyed playing through it again. The only other thing I played was, again, Dungeon Crawl Stone Soup. I just started a character, a demon spawn fighter that I didn't expect to get far, but it ended up getting 15 runes, so it's not the most interesting build, but I chose the deity Kazlal this time. It does a lot of elemental and storm-based abilities, so it was still a bit interesting, and I still enjoyed doing it. I think at this point, if I choose a fighter, they're the easiest way to beat the game, honestly. So in order to make it something interesting, kind of have to go for 10 to 15 runes, because otherwise it's just a waste of a character, to be honest. So if I'm going to be cheap enough to use a fighter, I may as well go for broke.
And maybe one day I'll finally get through with my air elementalist.
You'll end up like playing a mummy necromancer or something and winning like that, and you'll be like, "Oh, no, I don't have to do elementalist." But then you'll have an emptiness inside that you didn't.
I do want to be a necromancer eventually. That sounds pretty cool. But no, I gotta stick with my air elementalist.
You're probably blowing yourself up a lot, so.
Thanks, Matt.
No, I mean, air elemental magic is fairly volatile and bounces off a lot of stuff, so.
Being a tango doesn't really help much either.
No, I think you'll get this. You'll get this. I say this every time, and we'll be saying it a lot more in a month's time. Spoilers.
I mean, Tango, I mean, they always pitch them as they have a really frail beginning, but eventually they'll pick up. I haven't gotten to the pickup part yet, but I'm getting there, I would hope.
They eventually get big wings. Or do they don't get big wings? I know Gargoyles. Gargoyles probably is definitely a top-tier race. One, probably the best race in the game is Gargoyle, but they get a permanent flight ability. And I think Tengus do, or at least they get a evocable flight at some point. Anyhow, they can fly, and that's always useful.
Yeah.
Other than that, as for what I've been watching, I've been watching Mad Men, and I don't really want to comment on it until I'm done. And that'll be by the next time we record, so I'll talk about it then. I'm enjoying it, but I don't want to get into it until I've actually finished it. So, and I watch Beasties all the way through, from my American audience, Beast Wars. No, it's in Canada, it's Beasties. So.
They're both great, okay.
Watch Beasties all the way through, and I mean, this is the cartoon podcast. So we'll talk about Beasties later, and how Rat Trap and Dinobot should have done the nasty. They didn't, probably because it's a kid's cartoon, but anyways. You can cut the
behind the scenes.
With a knife, so, yeah, we'll talk about that. I finished up kind of quickly there, but that's what I've been up to, sort of stuff I've done before, so I don't want to labor the point. As for yourself, Chris, what have you been up to?
I've also been experiencing shoveling. I don't know how much snow you guys got, but we hit 28 inches during that last blizzard, which was not pleasant. But it's winter, so I guess it's expected. What can I do?
I thought you were going to segue into Shuffle Night there, but yeah, you guys got a pretty big storm.
I was going to try to segue into Frozen, but you covered that already.
I was watching the news, when you guys were getting that blizzard, and they were showing like a little sprinkling of snow on the ground in Washington, people cross-country skiing on it, and the city grinding to a halt. I'm like, come on, learn how to handle snow. Although I guess it's hard to handle it when you're not used to it. I know you guys got pounded, though.
Yeah, we got pounded, but snow is pleasant to watch and be in, and then the reality of that you have to shovel it kicks in.
Yeah, I don't like people that are like, I can't wait for the storm. Like, you're going to be shoveling the whole fucking day. Don't wish for the storm. Don't wish for the storm.
If you don't need to shovel it, I envy you.
No, I mean, I'll get some heat for this, but the people that like winter and the people that like snow are usually people that don't have to deal with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, once you put your mittens on and you pick up a snow scoop, you'll know. And honestly, it hasn't been so bad this year. It's been late for the most part, but it's just still a pain in the arse.
Yeah, winter's been pretty warm for the most part this year so far, and then the blizzard was kind of unusual in a way. But we're only halfway through winter. Yeah, it's kind of a mess here. Some more snow is probably on the way, eventually. Coming soon.
It's our punishment for not liking Frozen.
I think it is, really. Yeah. But other than the snow adventures, before things got really hectic for me since Katsucon is really soon, I did play Virtue's Last Reward, which is the sequel to 999, 9 Hours, 9 Persons, 9 Doors. It's a visual novel, and it's a bit difficult to talk about on the cast because it's pretty spoilery in and of itself.
Yeah.
And I can't really talk about it because it is a direct sequel and 999 also itself was a spoiler. So overall, I'll say I do enjoy the game, but I feel like in comparison to 999, it was a bit weaker because the characters weren't as fleshed out as they should have been. And I feel like the story kind of complexed itself and sacrifice the characters for that. It was a good interesting complex and all that, but it kind of went a bit overboard with it at times.
Right.
Another thing is, it's the middle game. There will be a third game that's coming out later this year, I think sometime in the summer. So being the middle game makes it leave a lot of mysteries that just make me feel unsettled. Will they ever get answered, or will they continue to be some big question mark?
Right, the middle of any trilogy is always the darker. Although, who knows, maybe the third one will be everyone gets killed, so...
Yeah, well, yeah. I don't think dying is new for the series, I'll just say that much.
I should play the first one at some juncture, I suppose. I mean, it's a pretty popular series at this point. Is the new game 3DS?
It's on the 3DS and the Vita. So you gotta get one of those handhelds. Eventually.
No thanks, but, you know.
Yeah, 999, I think it was originally just meant to be that one game, so I do enjoy how it's self-contained in and of itself, and that's why I enjoy it more. So maybe once the third game comes out, I can return to the story elements, like looking back on them, because I don't know if I want to go through the entire game again. It's really lengthy, even though I sped through that game in like 3 days, because it was very engrossing. I really wanted to know what all the mysteries were. But even though you can skip to certain plot scenes to make it easier so you don't need to see things repetitively because it's a visual novel and there are branching paths, it just gets exhausting. And I didn't want to take breaks either, because not only was it very interesting, but there's so much information I didn't want to forget anything.
Yeah, and if you mentioned that you were playing it, someone will spoil the rest of it on you.
Exactly, yeah.
Do you have any of the beautiful collector's watches?
No, I do not. I wasn't that engrossed in it that I would get the watches. I also started playing on Steam, Long Live the Queen, which is described as a career simulator, if you want to put it that way. But basically, you play as a princess who is waiting her 40 weeks to become queen, and she has to take classes and get all the settings to be a queen, a proper queen. So you have different classes like presence or public speaking, or there are various other skills like learning how to fence. And it sounds like it's pitched as a really cute game, but no, the dark reality is I've had people executed, I've destroyed marriages, I've been assassinated in a few routes, but it's fun, you know? A lot of interesting political intrigue, and it's a rather interesting story, although it also is kind of repetitive in a way because there's so many paths to go through and different endings to achieve.
Right. I guess there are hidden values and that are based on your choices and your and whatever statistics there are as well that determine how events play out.
Yeah, there are definitely... There's a visible value system, but trying to figure out what kind of value leads to what event. And there are also certain choices throughout the story, like a sort of like a visual novel where you choose which way to go. It just makes it a lot complicated. I tried to do my first run with a ton of notes, and I got pretty far, and then I had to look at a walkthrough for a hint on how to actually get past this part, and it turned out I was putting too much of a certain skill in the wrong area. So it's just... It was really complicated than I actually thought it would be, but I enjoyed it overall.
Yeah, you don't necessarily have to go down the same path to win all the time, though, right?
Yeah, there are definitely different paths. There's one where you can really put a lot of your skills into accounting, so you become queen and also have a really viable printing press. Or there's also a path where you become a magical girl, and you win through the power of magic.
That sounds like the more entertaining path. You get some bread in your mouth.
Yeah, it seems like to be like the canon path, like becoming a magical girl somewhere along the line. Yeah, there are different paths how you can become a magical girl, but there's lots of different settings, and there's a ton of achievements that I'm trying to get, but it's really exhaustive in a way.
Yeah, I watched the video about this like probably a year ago, and it looked fun and interesting, but the way he was playing, it was kind of loose and jokey, so it looked deep, but it's good to hear that it's actually quite a bit deeper than what I saw.
I mean, the princess's name is Elodie, and you can't spell Elodie without die, so that's the grim truth about Long Live the Queen. Will you actually live to become queen? Because I didn't for most of the time.
Well, kill everyone before they kill you.
Yeah, that was one of my paths, and I felt really bad about it, but I succeeded. And the last game I want to talk about is... I decided to finally get into a series that has been haunting me for years. Maybe it's been around for 30 years, and even though lots of people said this was the most boring stream they've ever watched, something about it inspired me. And now here I am playing Dragon Quest.
So, the most boring screen they ever watched?
There was a 30th anniversary stream that was airing on, like, Japan or something. And apparently most of the footage they showed was trailers they've already showcased off, like the Dragon Quest Builders game or the new Joker game. And there wasn't any new trailers about Dragon Quest XI. So everyone was like, wow, this stream sucks. Thanks for the 30th anniversary.
Considering the gravitas that Dragon Quest carries in Japan.
Exactly.
You'd think they would do a bit more. So you've gotten into Dragon Quest. Are you starting with Dragon Warrior or... are you going a bit later?
I am playing the Super Famicom remake. There was a translation patch for 1 and 2, so I'm playing through 1 right now. It's very bare bones and basic, but honestly, that's what I expected, and I'm enjoying it.
A lot of people would have the sentiment that it is very grindy, and it is extremely grindy.
Oh yeah, there was a part where I had to grind before the Swamp Cave because I was totally getting my butt kicked.
Any of the big encounters are often a war of attrition, like you hiss, and then you heal more, or whatever it's going to be called. I forget what the heal spells are actually called Dragon Quest games. Yeah, it's the war of attrition Dragon Quest 1, but as you get further into the series, it opens up a lot. Dragon Quest 8, I think you would enjoy.
It's about Yangus.
It's my favorite one. Well, let me tell you about Yangus. He's got... you know, he's not a beautiful guy, but he is an extremely interesting guy, and he is a beautiful guy. He's a fucking sweetheart, and he's got a cool spiky hat, he's got a big fucking axe, and he can kill Metal King Slimes in one hit with his executioner ability, and he's fucking funny. So, Yangus, either sell Dragon Quest VIII that you're going to do a lot of puff-puffs with Jessica, or you're going to... stomp a lot of faces with Yangus. They're the two best characters, Yangus and Jessica. And it's worth playing the game just for them. And no, I'm not going to say any more about Dragon Quest VIII. When you finish 1 and 2, if you want to play 8, fucking recommend this. It's terrific.
So you can say all this stuff about Yangus, but that won't change that my first real experience with Yangus was that he destroyed me in Fortune Street.
He is a thief and a rogue.
And apparently, like, a monopolizing genius.
I have a Yangus figure, so I like him. He's fucking cool.
I think I'm halfway through Dragon Quest 1. I just rescued the princess from the cave.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what else is left. The world map seems fairly small unless there's more hidden...
It's not long. Once you make the bridge or whatever and then... yeah, it's not long.
I mean, I say I rescued the princess, but the most important part was I got the puff-puff, so...
Is there a puff-puff in that one?
Yeah. I was so excited when I countered. I'm like, ah, yes, the tradition is here. This is where it all began.
I don't know if there's one in the original Dragon Quest, the Famicom one, but it would have been censored in the NES game.
Dragon Warrior, yeah.
Which is what I've played through.
Yeah.
Maybe I should get it for the Game Boy Color. That and Dragon Warrior Monsters.
Yeah, I was contemplating getting the actual English releases. Because, I mean, there they are. Square Enix actually paid attention to North America. But Super Famicom looked really nice. So I just wanted to go towards that one.
I've been debating playing through Dragon Quest V finally. And you might push me over the edge if you keep talking about Dragon Quest. So we'll see where that goes. I haven't fired my DS up in a long time, so hopefully everything's on the up and up. But, the SNES games, the Tower in the Sky trilogy, whatever it is, 4, 5, and 6. 4 is great. People don't like the accents that they've written into the English release of 4DS. They are a bit difficult to read sometimes, so I don't mind them. It's flavor. And Dragon Quest VI is fairly long. and does some bullshit with Street Pass. I think I've talked about that at length on the podcast before. I won't get into it.
Both of us in general have ranted about Street Pass.
What you'll find playing Dragon Quest is that the games stay the same, but they also get different. Like, where Final Fantasy often changes the formula completely from game to game, Dragon Quest is sort of a gradual evolution that keeps a lot of the same elements, and that might turn a lot of people off. So that's why I say it's alright if you like only a couple of Dragon Quests, because the series can get repetitive. But if you're going to play any Dragon Quest after getting into the series, maybe one of the DS games, but definitely Dragon Quest VIII. Dragon Quest IX is not a bad intro as well, but Dragon Quest VIII has the best characters because it has actual characters, and Dragon Quest IX, where you make your character, it can't do the same thing.
Well, it was the game playing too after I finished one, because I want to meet Helix. Helix looks like a fun character. A cute slime thing.
The heel slime?
Yeah.
Have you been hunting down metal slimes?
No, I haven't encountered any yet. I've just been grinding a lot, hoping for the best. I don't even know if they appear yet, or maybe they're just that rare in Dragon Quest One.
I kind of forget where they appear. But they appear, if you're fighting gold men, then you can probably find metal slimes.
Not yet. I think I'm supposed to be finding the golem next in the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's cool that you're enjoying Dragon Quest. I think I saw some tweets to the effect that you were playing it, but I didn't know how you'd respond to it, since it is a very archaic game, Dragon Quest, and the games aren't often as involved mechanically as some other ones are. But when you consider going Super Saiyan in the later games and such, it's a bit more involved. But,
well, they are drawn by Toriyama, so I guess that makes sense.
There's a mouse companion in Dragon Quest VIII that can do various abilities based on what kind of cheese you feed him. So, I mean, you know, keep that in mind.
Surrender or pay the consequences.
So we're going to just jump right into things. We're going to talk about three shows each that we just really, really want to discuss, and hopefully we won't go on for way too long, because we can get really passionate as we're slipping in already. But Matt, let's start with you. What is the first show you want to discuss?
Well, as you said, we're going to go through three shows, and I'm not doing the obvious things like the Transformers or Ghostbusters or anything like that. I mean, from that era, obviously, I watched them and I loved them, and I talked fondly about them on the podcast before. The first cartoon I really want to talk about is The Raccoons, and this is a Canadian cartoon. It basically ran from 1985 to 1992. Now, it was first conceived like as an animated special in the early 80s. It's the creation of Kevin Gillis with cooperation from the CBC. The Raccoons kind of focuses on a certain raccoon, Bert Raccoon, who is sort of the kid with the wanderlust kind of thing. He kind of, his heart's bigger than his mind kind of thing. Like, he wants to succeed, and he wants to be a pilot and all this, and very clumsy about it at times, but he's very heartfelt about it. But the main focus of The Raccoons is this evergreen forest that, like, this tycoon aardvark, Cyril Sneer, wants to deforest it for profit. And throughout the show, it's an environmental message show, obviously. It doesn't get very preachy. He connects more with his son, Cedric Sneer, who doesn't necessarily follow the same idioms as Cyril, and he sort of grows as a person and as a father and becomes more of still concerned about money by the end of it, but not as evil about it, I guess. And you see how Bert grows and how the family he lives with grows, and how these characters grow throughout the series. I'm not sure if you guys had that in the States, this show.
Yeah, I was going to ask, do you know if we actually aired in America? Because I'm not even sure. I don't think I watched it, and so I don't even know if it actually aired on American television.
I'm sure it aired, but it probably didn't go into syndication like for as long as it did in Canada, because it's a Canadian cartoon. I mean, it was even shown recently on Teletoon Retro, and then like it's a cartoon that kind of occupies the same place for me as Fraggle Rock, which is also a very heartfelt show. Obviously, that's a Muppet show and not a cartoon show, because you know Muppets are real and cartoons aren't. So,
well, we tried to keep it limited because we could also go on for ages about Muppets.
Yeah. Obviously, there's you know, situation of the week on the raccoons, and it gets silly at times, but there's a lot of drama in it as well, and a lot of heartfelt messages about protecting the environment, and it does it without being as preachy as, say, Captain Planet, which I watched as well, but it's like the raccoons is more genuine, I think. It has probably
the
best...
I think it sounds
a
lot better than Captain Planet.
The Raccoons probably has the best outro song from any cartoon, Run With Us. It's fucking fantastic. Fantastic. Like I said, I don't know how in-depth we want to go about these cartoons, but The Raccoons, for me, is early childhood cartoon for me, because 85 to 1992, that's my early childhood, and I always loved watching it when it came on. It was just a fun show with fun adventure, lots of hijinks. Sometimes it was funny, sometimes it was serious. You know, as shows from that time period are apt to do. You know, I forget if there's any really very special episodes of it, but, you know, seeing the pig brothers that work for Cyril Sneer trying to get in his good graces, and watching Cyril grow as a character and watching Bert grow as a character. It's just a really good cartoon, and if you have kids out there, let them watch the raccoons, like, rather than whatever they're watching now. No, if they're just watching really hollow shows, let them watch the raccoons, because it does have you know, a heartfelt message. If you're gonna watch, let them watch a cartoon from the past. This is the kind of cartoon that I would recommend them that they watch.
Is it actually available in physical formats now, or streaming?
I think it was available as DVDs, but I don't think there's a whole lot of episodes per set. A problem with cartoons on DVDs is that they often really cut it short and cheat you about it. I'm not sure if The Raccoons is available for streaming. Like I said, I last watched it through a couple years ago on Teletoon Retro. It might be on your favorite streaming site. I'm not sure. Folks these days might find it corny or cheesy, but that's because, you know, the message changes after 30 years. Like, but I believe that a message that's heartfelt and has significance.
So the show I really want to talk about is, as I've alluded in the intro, Pirates of Dark Water. That was probably the first show I can recall being absolutely obsessed with when I was a kid. I really wanted to be on a pirate ship with Ren of Octopon and going on to find those 13 treasures. And I think it really stood out compared to other cartoons, not because it was, ooh, grim, dark, and all that, but because it actually had more of a plot-based scenario.
It had contiguous episodes. The plot carried through them.
Yeah. And then it always bothered me that the series ended before they found all 13 treasures. I think they only managed to get 20 episodes on air, 21, and then they just never found all 13. And that will always bother me for, like, years on end. It's really funny because I don't actually remember much of the episodes. I tried rewatching them, but I've been so busy I haven't really got a chance to, and fortunately it's on DVD now, all the seasons, so I can eventually get up back to that. But I just remember, like, rewatching it when I was in a nostalgic blast in college, and it was just as fun as I remember it to be when I was a kid. Sometimes it's a little, you know, cheesy as it is for an early 90s cartoon, but overall it's still really exciting, and I think the characters were good. They're not exactly amazing. I mean, it is a children's cartoon, so I don't think they put too much depth or thought into it, but overall they're enjoyable cast, and they're just really cool. It was just a cool adventure, and it's really funny because I'm not much of a sea person. I guess I'm a land lover in the end.
I think it was a kid's cartoon, but I think it might have had a prime time or near prime time slot, which I think is partly what happened in regards to it ending abruptly, is because it was ahead of its time to have a kid's cartoon that was a bit more serious and had a bit more of a continuous plot and had characters that had actual development. I watched it a couple of years ago as well. Or actually a year ago, I guess. I watched it through, and it's definitely a fun show and definitely holds up. And, you know, the characters they're made for a younger audience, obviously, but they do have depth, and it's not all like Captain Justice of the Leonardo Brigade or something like that, right? It's not just heroic leader and the Raphael of the group and shit like that. It's the characters are a bit gray in morality at times.
And they are pirates after all.
They are pirates after all. Yeah. And the animation and color choice is pretty good in the show as well. Like the color and palettes that they choose. It's an alien world, obviously, and I think that the palettes that they've chosen for it definitely help that. And the pirate design as well. The main bad guy, I'm actually forgetting his name now, but the main bad guy is pretty cool.
Bloth, if I recall correctly.
Bloth, yeah.
Yeah, I recall reading that the first season, which is like only a couple of episodes when they were on their original network, some of the backgrounds were watercolors, and that must have cost a lot, but it looks really good.
Yeah.
And then they switched networks and the animation budget went down. That's probably also what made the series end prematurely, but overall it still held up, even though season 2 was rockier, but it was still enjoyable and I still enjoyed it, and maybe in my dreams I'll find all 13 treasures and they'll know how it ends, but I guess that's what fanfiction is for or something. I'm kind of surprised there hasn't been a comic or anything to conclude it, but like most children's television shows, I think another reason why it didn't last long is because they didn't really have much merchandise to tie into it. There were 2 video games or something, but they're probably bad. Yeah, they're garbage, so it's a shame, though.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't resurrect it. They resurrected Thundercats and Masters of the Universe.
Maybe in time, Pirates of Dark Water will come back. I don't know if it's a licensing issue or just some other kind of issue. I guess it is kind of regarded as a cult classic, in a way.
It could probably succeed as a movie as well.
Well, they can find all remaining 5 treasures in the span of an hour and 30 minutes. I mean, just go for it.
Starring Kevin Costner as Ren taking his water world to the world of dark water. No, I think it'd be a cool show to resurrect for sure. It's the shows that have no resolution that you want to come back, because it's like, I wanted to see this end.
I mean, it's really, most cartoons, you know, when they're, especially because they're so episodic and they don't really have a plot going on, I mean, it's fine whenever they end, but she was like, Chris, come on, they gotta have a conclusion somewhere.
Well, Chris, maybe you should have bought more parts of Dark Water toys and games.
Maybe I should have. I should have bought those very bad video games. Well, fortunately, when the DVD release came out, it must have gathered some attention that there's still interest for the series out there. People are looking back, wondering if it'll ever end.
Yeah. They have, said that it was cut short, so are the episodes that were cut short, are they there as storyboards, or are they actually unreleased episodes?
I'm not sure, actually. I should actually get the DVD for myself eventually and find out if they're extras.
Sometimes they do that with, like, these kind of shows that end it prematurely. They just put, like, storyboards with rehearsal voiceovers on them and things like that, which is cool.
Yeah, like still, remnants still of sad. What could have been. Yeah.
Still sad.
Matt, what's your second show?
Well, it's not from the 80s. It's almost from the year 2000. It's just from the year 1999. So it's still from the previous millennium. But, you know, I got to talk about CyberSix, which we've talked about on the podcast before. But
now you can talk about it more.
Yeah, I think it's worth talking about because CyberSix was something special. And we were just talking about a show that ended prematurely. This is also a show that ended prematurely. I don't know if you've seen all the episodes yet, but
I should get back to it, yeah.
Yeah, I will just say that it ended on a cliffhanger, and it just fucking drove... It's driven me nuts for years that it ended how it ended. CyberSix, basically, it's a 1999 animated series. It's based on an Argentinian comic, and it's produced by a Canadian company, and animated by a Japanese company. So it's like a cooperative effort between three nations, so that's pretty cool on the outset.
Is that comic still ongoing, by the way?
You know what? I'm not sure. I've tried to read it in the past, and I wish more of it was translated.
Yeah, that would probably be an
issue. It's a pretty raw comic. It's a pretty raw comic.
Yeah, right? I've read some of it well. The cartoon takes some things really lightly.
Yeah, I mean, the cartoon does take some things lightly, but the comic is much more raw about it. Basically, CyberSix... I don't want to get too much into the plot of the show because it's worth watching for the show, but she is basically an escaped experiment, kind of. She needs this fluid called sustenance that she gets from like these sort of Frankenstein creatures or genetic experiment creatures that her creator, Dr. Von Richter, created. And these creatures are called, like, fixed ideas, and the more intelligent ones, I think, are called technos, and it's basically their life essence, and it's sort of CyberSix reconciling her identity and her mortality and her reliance on sustenance and her past and finding her bro, Data 7, that's now a panther. And, you know, trying to live life as normally as she can. It's interesting that CyberSix's alter ego that she teaches at a school with is a male alter ego, and CyberSix herself is a female alter ego. So it's an interesting dynamic there as well that I haven't seen in a lot of other like properties from that time. And she's trying to reconcile her relationship with another teacher from her school and her life as CyberSix that's, you know, fraught with danger because she needs to get into these situations with the fixed ideas in order to get the sustenance. So that's sort of the hook to get her into altercations with Von Richter and his sort of young clone. That's actually the main antagonist of the cartoon. That's a bit accelerated compared to the comic where he doesn't come until later. Some of the episodes are very monster of the week and not as great as other ones. Others are, yes, they have like a monster for that week or whatever, but there's often an emotional payoff to the show as well, or you learn some tidbit about CyberSix or Data 7 or Von Richter, and you see you're getting closer and closer to actually facing Von Richter. And at the end, there's like the series kind of ends, but it kind of leaves on a real, real cliffhanger. And it's only 13 episodes. That's heartbreaking. That's only 13 episodes.
Just like 13 treasures.
It's like 13 treasures. I loved CyberSix when I first watched it because it was one of the most beautiful cartoons I ever watched at the time, and that animation still holds up, and the title song is cool, and CyberSix, she's really cool, and it's like, man, this cartoon, it's just unbelievable. And it ended on that note, and I think it ended because it was too expensive to make. Like, this cartoon was too big for its britches. I think it aired on Fox in the States briefly. It was mostly aired on Teletoon in Canada. And it's just heartbreaking that we didn't get another 13 episodes to finish up the series. I would take the 13 episodes, and obviously I do, but I would take it more to heart if it actually had a resolution, but it doesn't. And that's the real tragedy of Cyber Six, is that we don't see how the real tragedy of Cyber Six ends.
Having read some of the comic as well, I do think they did a pretty decent job of adapting the more dark and obviously adult nature of the comic for a children's show. Although I guess the vials were really weird. I guess it could have just made her a vampire. That would have made sense to me.
She could have made her, like, just have to lay on hands or something, even if they didn't want to show her biting someone.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the original comic, I do recommend reading it because it's good, but it is darker, or at least less filtered than the cartoon is. Like, I think her actual costume in the comic is from a dominatrix shop or a BDSM shop.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so, there's that. Yeah, I'd recommend that you finish it, or at this rate, you'd probably want to start again from the beginning, but...
Yeah, it is on DVD now, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. So what is your second cartoon that you wish to talk about?
Well, Matt, the second show I would really like to talk about is Mighty Max. Mighty Max was obviously to go and pair with the toys, which I never had anyway. But I had the cartoon to watch, and the cartoon is as 90s as you can get. As Max, you know, wearing a baseball cap that has magical powers nonetheless. He's always saying stuff that are obviously 90s lingo. But despite Max being obnoxious, it is kind of charming to see that kind of nostalgia with the really cheesy 90s stuff going on. But also, it was also a show that took itself seriously. There's Al, who would give him advice, and there was Norman, the Viking guy, but he had his depth to him too. They all did. Max was definitely an evolving character who was always a wise ass throughout the show, but...
Yeah.
He matures as the series goes on, and this series actually ended, so that was important. It kind of ended on a grim note. I don't know if we should just spoil it here on the podcast.
I've watched it, so you can talk
about it. Yeah.
Is this note, folks, or spoilers coming up?
Spoilers coming up. So the end of the series, they go up against the Skullmaster. I believe that's the arch nemesis name. It's as tacky as it gets, but I digress. Norman has died. Virgil has also died, and there's Max. He surrenders the baseball cap to Skullmaster. And Skullmaster almost gets all the power, but then, you know, Max does something daring, risking his life, and he gets sent back in time to the very first episode, but with knowledge of what has happened. So it's sort of concluded, but it wasn't exactly resolved.
Okay. You just left to wonder, then.
Yeah, it's sort of an... I don't mind it as much. I'd rather have this than not finding all 13 treasures.
Exactly, yeah.
But yeah, I definitely remember enjoying the show. This is a show that is not on DVD or anything, because it's something that I just had never expected, that in the future people would be looking back on old shows and want to rewatch them. But fortunately, these are on YouTube by some method. And I've been rewatching a couple of them. It's still just as fun. They do have some morals at the end of each episode, but they're not really cheesy or overbearing. They're just kind of a little tidbit sometimes. Sometimes they are information about geography or history related based on what happened in the episode, or they do have certain morals in life, kind of like Sonic says in a way, but
yeah.
I mean, I remember one that's always brought up when I reread articles about Mighty Max, that there was one that real violence does lead to real consequences, and obviously because the show is so much fighting, they really want to emphasize how not cool it is to kill people. I guess it's going a little Undertale here.
So but, how do you feel about these kind of PSAs in cartoons, just as a brief segue?
I kind of don't mind them, as long as they're not really obnoxious or like Captain Planet, where the entire episode is kind of like a huge moral disguising of itself. I don't mind it.
Like Sailor says and things like that.
Yeah, all right to have a little educational bit, if you want to call it that, at the end of the episode, where they just spend a little bit of time reflecting on what happened.
I think people make fun of them, but I think they're not bad because kids will actually listen and watch them. So I there's no harm in them. They're all right.
And again, they're definitely better than a huge Saturday morning hour-long movie special that they really drive in drugs are bad.
Like cartoon All-Stars to the Rescue?
Yeah.
Is that the one you're talking about?
Then? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's Michelangelo and Garfield and, yeah.
Yeah, that was a bit too obnoxious, but...
I watched it a couple months ago, actually, just for fun, but anyhow.
It's not, we could have a whole podcast on that.
We could.
Jeez, I should have brought it up.
We'll have to.
But yeah, overall, same with Pirates of Darkwater. It was another show that took itself more seriously. There were some Monsters of the Week kind of thing going on, but it didn't have some plot resemblance going on, and it did conclude, so I feel like it had that going for it. It was a very enjoyable show for me, and I wish I also had a baseball cap in my youth that transported me to places.
Yeah, that would be fun.
I mean, certainly the reason why the show actually lasted as long as it did, because the toy line was so popular and they actually got a bit of like merchandise and recognition outside its own self.
Yeah, it was like Polly Pockets except Morty Max.
Yeah.
Yeah, the toys are actually kind of cool, and...
cool and interesting,
yeah. No, they were neat.
All right, Matt, what is the third show you'd like to discuss?
The third show that I would like to discuss is Samurai Pizza Cats. So, Samurai Pizza Cats is a Saban Entertainment adaptation of the Tatsunoko Productions anime Kyato Ninden Taiende. It was first aired on YTV in Canada. It's not a direct translation of KNT because, like, the translations that they were doing were poor. So they essentially wrote entirely new dialogue and made it more comedic than it was in Japan.
Yeah, I think the story is they didn't get a script at all. They just gave them the animation and said, do what you want with it.
Now, there are purists, of course, nowadays that are like, huh, you like the dub of Samurai Pizza? You like the dub of Kato Ninden Taiende? You fucking scrub. But, like, I'm nostalgic for the dub of Samurai Pizza Cats, and I watched Kato Ninden Taiende. I watched it on Real Player, right? So it's been a while. It's not like I just watched Kato Ninden Taiende in the last year and am a fan of it. I watched it on fucking Real Player, and for anyone that used and suffered Real Player,
that's a nostalgia ago. Cast in and of itself.
Yeah. Kyato Ninden Taiende is not a serious anime. It's not. Yes, it's not as silly as Samurai Pizza Cats, and the plot is more coherent, and Speedy Cerviche and Polyester's relationship makes more sense in it. It's not... without silliness, though. That said, I like both of them. Samurai Pizza Cats is the one I'm nostalgic for, of course.
Both series can coexist happily in this world.
Exactly, and it was a fun show. We were talking before the cast of whether or not I realized it was anime, and I did because I had been exposed to anime before this, and Sailor Moon was only a year or two away, and it was airing on YTV, and the program jockeys on YTV, as they're called, PJs, or program jockeys, they discussed the shows and read mail and shit between shows. That's what they did on YTV. They basically had presenters to talk about the shows, and they were relatively candid about where things came from. Like, when Sailor Moon was out there talking a lot about anime, and, They didn't hold back where the shows were from. It's fairly clear, anyways, where Samurai Pizza Cats is from.
Yeah, Samurai's, I wonder.
Little Tokyo and all that, right? It's like... So, anyways, enough about whether we knew about us or not.
I mean, perhaps I didn't know because I am a few years younger than you.
You would have been three or something at the time. So
yeah, like, so I probably don't remember, first of all. The only thing I remember about the show is pretty much the opening and not much else about the series, except for you streaming the game. And I probably didn't have the context that you did, the YTV presenters. We probably just had it aired like a regular cartoon, and it looks different. Enjoy.
I mean, they wouldn't have driven it home every time, but, like, they would have talked about it then.
Yeah, yeah.
And people would have wrote in about the show asking about the origins and things like that. It's like, YTV did really good. I think I forget if they still do the whole program jockey thing. They might. But I thought that was really set them apart from other channels I watch cartoons on. Anyhow, Sam Repeats Cats, yes, it was funny. Yes, it was silly. But it also had a lot of cool robots. Polyester, one hot cat. But, you know, it's sort of, you know, Polyester is my favorite pizza cat. But it's not like I dislike any of them. The sort of reserve cats that they ring their bells to ask for help and shit, they're cool. Speedy Ceviche and Guido Anchovy are cool. Like, there's no characters I really dislike in Samurai Pizza Cats. It's not like the Ninja Turtles where I didn't like Leonardo because basically I couldn't hear Leonardo talk because his lips were firmly planted on Splinter's asshole. So, you know, shots fired. But no, yeah, Samurai Pizza Cats, it was a fun show. It was, like I said, it was zany, but it was self-deprecating. And it's not like it talked down to the people that were watching it either. It's obvious that, yes, this show, they didn't follow the original plan for it, but they obviously had fun with it. And I think that translates into watching it. And they've got more fur than any turtle ever had. You know, stronger than old cheese, all that. It's a cool show. Again, self-deprecating, self-referential. It's just fun. And, I mean, I've said that word a dozen times, and I'm going to stop talking about the show now because I'll keep saying it. But, yes, if I could talk about Samurai Pizza Cats in one word, it'd be fun. Just a great watch. And you mentioned the Famicom game. That's a fantastic game. That's a fantastic game. I think I had to make my own story up when I was streaming it. It was probably something stupid. But
well, it's just like the original show. You had to make up like your own dialogue because I didn't give you a translation.
Like I said, I don't want to labor the point on any of these cartoons. So we'll segue to you, Chris. What on earth is your third show to talk about?
What on earth? It's Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? First, there were the computer games, which were a huge hit in the 80s and 90s. And then there was that kind of Jeopardy-esque game show where
that's the one I watched,
in the world
yeah.
with the Rockapella.
Yeah.
But then eventually they decided to make an actual cartoon on it. And, you know, I was already roped in from the computer games and that game show, so I had to check out the cartoon. It's a lot of, you know, I guess Monster of the Week, you know, Carmen steals whatever ridiculous thing each week. But it had sort of a plot to it. They did try to go in depth with Carmen's character. There were actually a couple of episodes later on in the season that went to why she became a thief and why she betrayed Acme. So that was really interesting to it. Had, you know, the protagonists were also fairly 90s, but they were a good cast. Zack and Ivy, they were like the cool siblings of the crew. Chief, for some reason, was a computerized talking head that jabbed all the time. I don't know, it was weird. But overall, it was, as an educational show, it was really fun. As a kid, I was a master of geography because I played so much Carmen Sandiego. I could also talk about history for nonstop. So, as an educational show, it was really awesome. Had a really badass opening sequence. Well, not opening sequence, like an opening song with a chorus and everything. That was really pumped you up. I don't know how long lasted. I'm sure it must have been a couple of episodes if they actually got invested enough to talk about Carmen's backstory or develop the characters enough.
Yeah.
I'm surprised Carmen Sandiego lasted as long as it did. I don't even know if it's still around because that was a huge franchise. And the cartoon is probably definitely up there along with the games. And the game show, I mean, you know, it's aimed for kids and it's not exactly easy to watch, but the cartoon just makes it more interesting with all the cool animation and Carmen shooting rockets everywhere.
Yeah, I don't know if I've seen much of the cartoon. I would have watched it if it were available or aired a lot, but I don't really have much memory of it. I have to watch a couple episodes to see if it clicks. But
it was something like late 90s, like mid to late 90s, anyway. So, I don't know, it's probably a bit out of your scope.
No, I mean, fucking man child. I watch cartoons all my life. you know. Well, maybe in the late 90s I was watching Donkey Kong Country or something.
All right, let's... Yeah, that's something else I regret watching. I'm looking at the Wikipedia right now, and they're like, yeah, I remember all these ridiculous like villains like Dr. Cerebellum that were straight from the game, and yeah, adapted from the game. Yeah, they were pretty faithful with it. They really knew their product, and they just made it really enjoyable, and I think that's important.
I know you like Carmen Sandiego. I didn't know you were into the games and all that as well. That's untouched ground for me, but that's interesting to hear.
I would love to play the Carmen Sandiego games again just for fun, even though it's probably like really outdated geography or something, or outdated information, but hey, it was fun. I remember playing them a lot as a kid, too. I don't know if like this entire seasons are on DVD. It was actually, I'm looking at this now, it's 40 episodes, which is pretty lengthy for a kid's cartoon, especially especially for one that did try to hold some semblance of a plot or some kind of section like that. So I think only a couple of episodes are on DVD, but I'm sure, you know, maybe all the episodes are out there on the internet if you just want to check it out.
Yeah. Did you watch Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego?
Was
that a game show?
Yeah, I think it was also a game show.
Shows how much I remember, but yeah.
I think I recall watching it, but it was also when I was hitting the age where I was getting kind of moving on past that.
Yeah.
And then also it was just like, I guess, a little weird traveling through time. But Carmen, I don't know, Carmen can do whatever the heck she wants, I guess. So the next shows we're going to be discussing are kind of the general shows that kids were really watching along. These are not ones that are really specific to us, but more of like the general kid shows that everyone was really hyped about. And you walk into school and everyone's like, did you see the latest episode of this? And then I guess Beasties doesn't really consider one of those instances, but we really want to talk about Beasties anyway. It's something that both of us share.
Oh, I'd say Beast Wars and Beasties was really popular at the time. It actually was, and it was actually controversial at the time, so.
I don't think it was as popular at my school. I think it was mostly the original Transformers, and Beasties was kind of, like, something that I was more into. Although it's called Beast Wars here, but now that we keep calling it Beasties, I'm just going to keep calling it that.
Cool. Beasties is pretty cool.
Yeah, let's go talk about Beasties. Because for me, I don't remember much about it, but I definitely put a lot of time into it. I think I stopped watching because I think the plot was dragging, or I just lost interest. It was something when Tigertron found the other energy thing with the Hawk. I'm sorry, I should like, brush up on names here. I think that was
Tigertron and Air Razor.
Yeah.
That's still in season one. And season one's like 26 episodes, but season two and three are 13, so once season one's done, the plot actually kind of accelerates.
Oh, okay. Well, I must have hit a really bad bump and then stopped watching.
Yeah.
I just remember I got to that point, and then I was like, are they coming back? And I just didn't want to get back to it. I tried to get back to it at one point.
Oh, yeah. No, that's actually in season two. You mean when they actually are taken away?
Yeah,
that's in season two.
Okay, so that was the part where I just lost interest personally.
You're just upset because they were the OTP in the show for a while.
Actually, I thought it was Dinobot and Rat Trap.
Yeah, well, Dinobot and Rat Trap. Of course, Dinobot, the Predacon turned Maximal, always fighting with staunch Maximal Rat Trap. But it's like, just fuck already. It's like the sexual tension. You just cut it with a knife. I was expecting to be like, you know, hey, Chopper Face, why don't I take a suck of your dick? And then Dinobot be like, of course, Ribbon. have this log of suck that you like. It's like, just get it over with. Just, like, get it over with. Anyways, like...
Oh, man.
Like, I actually looked it up, and the pairing's actually called Dino Trap, and...
Jesus.
It's actually the most popular pairing in the show, and... I shouldn't be surprised, because... You know, every episode of Beasties in Season 1, it's like, okay, Dinobot or Rattrap or Cheetor is going to disobey Optimus's orders, and then he'll reprimand them at the end, say, don't do it again, then they'll go look for cotton candy, and then they'll do it again the next episode. There's a lot of repetitive plots in Season 1, but Rattrap and Dinobot, you know, they definitely had something going on the side. They definitely had something going on the side there.
Yeah, there was some time ago I started trying to rewatch the series because my friend really got into it again. She was really just talking about Dinobot. I guess she left out all the Rat Trap stuff for some reason. I wonder why, but...
Well, Rat Trap's like... well, he's the second best character, so don't leave out Rat Trap ever.
Yeah, I guess Rat Trap was probably one of my favorites.
Wasminator's the best character.
Yeah, Wasminator.
He was cool. The best one.
Black Arachnia, though. Come on. That's the best character.
Black Arachnia is a good character. I'd say I like Wasminator, then Rattrap, then Black Arachnia.
Didn't they also
I don't like Silverbolt. I don't like Silverbolt, but I like Black Arachnia.
Was Infernal the ant they managed to, like, bring to life at some point in the series, and he was really obnoxious?
He was, loyal to a fault to Megatron. Called Megatron the royalty and his queen, and... the Predacon base was the colony. So yeah, he was like crazy. He was like way too influenced by his beast mode.
Yeah.
Which was a thing.
You're far more familiar with this because you just rewatched it. The memories are just slowly coming back to me, like, oh yeah, that happened, didn't it?
There's actually a lot of death in it, which is strange, but death in a toy cartoon is to make room for new toys. But
yeah.
There's actually fairly violent deaths in the show, and fairly good characters. I talked about Rattrap. He goes from being a coward to being fairly brave at times, and he's the best character. And he's the second best character. He's the best Maximal character.
I want to point out right now that Dinobot and Rattrap are voiced by the same person, so that must have been really interesting.
So it's masturbation.
Oh god.
No, Rattrap and Dinobot is legitimately one of the better interactions in it, because they have this sort of combative fits at each other, but then they kind of respect each other's prowess at what they do. The first season is kind of like, oh, we'll attack your base and then we'll attack yours. It's really...
Basic, yeah.
But eventually they, discover the Autobots because they're on prehistoric Earth, and there's an alien factor as well, and it kind of, it was separate from Transformers continuity, or so we thought, but, Starscream's in an episode, and, which has my favorite line in the whole series, Wasminator has headache in his whole body! It's Wasminator. It's Wasminator. So I gotta give thumbs up to Wasminator. But no, it gets fairly deep in plot and fairly ingrained in the original Transformers. The controversy with Beast Wars or Beasties was that Optimus Prime, he's a truck, not a monkey, so they didn't like the changes perceived to characters that were established, but Optimus Prime was not Optimus Prime. And besides, it was cool. It was a cool concept to have these organic beast forms that they had to stay in, or else the energon exposure would, fry their circuits. And it was always exciting when an episode came around that a stasis pod came to Earth, and you're like, oh, is it going to be a Predacon? Is it going to be a...
Yeah, those were always good episodes.
Yeah, those are always good episodes.
Didn't the humans start showing up, or at least Neanderthals eventually show up in the show?
Primitive humans, and... They were an important factor because where the humans helped the Autobots win the war against the Decepticons, Megatron wanted to eliminate the cradle of life where humans were developed, and the valley that they developed into modern humans from, so that the humans obviously wouldn't be there for the Autobots and the Decepticons win the Great War. So there's a lot of factors like that in the show. So I was actually impressed with how much depth there was to the story of Beast Wars as I went on.
So it's definitely worth picking back up again one day. Finally, go back to where I had left off in my youth.
You gotta write some Rat Trap Dinobot fanfiction, so...
Oh, man. The show just writes that itself.
Like, watch the show for a couple of episodes and tell me that they're not gonna be... You know, apparently there's Beast Wars 2 and Beast Wars Neo in Japan that are actually more traditional anime, and I'm interested in watching them. I'm hoping that they're translated somewhere. I don't know how it fits into this. Hey, there's lots of dinosaurs in it.
So hey, maybe you'll get that Platinum game, too.
That would be amazing. That would be amazing. Platinum Games do a Beast Wars or a Thundercats game, and it'd be fantastic. But again, the controversy was there that it was, you know, that's where the quote you might see if you go to the Transformers Wiki, which is, you know, all of the captions and write-ups are humorous on it. The whole truck not monkey thing is from there, and I don't know. I liked that it was beast forms now, and because, like, my favorite Transformers were, like, the Terracons, which were all monsters, and like Ripper Snapper was a sort of shark dinosaur, and I love the Dinobots. It was ideal for me that they're all beasts because that's the kind of Transformers I like the most. I don't know. Yeah, I didn't see any problems.
Yeah, I also like the original Transformers. I mean, there are vehicles and they turn into the things. Well, they're not all vehicles, but you know, machinery that transform. And then they had animals. It's kind of like watching Super Sentai or something. Or every season they have a different theme, and it's still pretty much the same thing. It's just a different take on it. So why not? Beasties.
But anyways, I mean, I'll tone it down for the next couple ones we got to talk about. But what's the next show that all the kids were watching?
All the kids were watching X-Men. Everyone wanted to be a mutant and get accepted to the Xavier School.
Yeah.
It had a really badass opening. It's going to stick forever. Gambit, you know, Gambit was my cartoon crush, but he was freaking cool, even though the comics really make things ridiculous because it's the comics, but...
Yeah, he's like a horseman of the apocalypse in the comics or some shit. Anyway, never mind the comics. X-Men was a good show. It was a fairly... I don't want to see the word adult or mature, but it was more mature than some other cartoons.
It did take itself seriously.
Like
for a children's show, yeah.
They killed Morph in like episode 4 or 5, and then they showed the scene of Morph getting died about a dozen more times in the series. And
did anyone even like Morph though?
Well, yes, because he was a character that died early, so people wanted to see more of him. And he had one of the most powerful abilities.
That's true. Actually
shape change. That's fairly powerful. It was a good show. And it had its own comic as well. And it was fairly true to the original like comic material. They took in a lot of the X-Men villains like Omega Red and the Shi'ar and things like that. So there was a lot of fan service or content taken in from the comics that is even cool when they're doing the Emicron Crystal Shi'ar Phoenix Saga. Jean Grey, actually, she donned her old costume in it, so that was for, like, fans of the old X-Men, and not the new, 90s pocket pouch body that she had.
Oh, gosh, like, yeah.
Every costume in the 90s had about a dozen fucking pouches, per square centimeter, so. A lot of fan service, and a lot of references, and a lot of content. It was good.
I'm not too familiar with the comics. I mean, I mostly focus on the Gambit stuff because I was obviously biased. They did a fair adaptation to creating it as a children's show. I mean, there's obviously they can't do a lot because there's so much X-Men to this day. Yeah. But for what they covered, I think they covered most of the main important parts that you'd really associate with X-Men. And they did fairly well for a children's show. They took things seriously. They did keep it as serious, like, talking about the racism between mutants and humans and diversity. It was really cool, and a lot of characters, they really shone out. I don't know what Jubilee did. I don't know what great is fireworks, but you know what? She was still a trooper.
Yeah, she was a young mutant, right? She had still places to go. Yeah, it was a fairly continuous show in terms of plot as well, so there's a lot of multi-part episodes, but also episodes that happened earlier would still have relevance later.
Yeah, I'm not sure actually how they concluded this series. They must have ended at some point, something relevant.
I forget. I think, I know they eventually had, like, the Asteroid M and the Brood and things like that.
But yeah.
I kind of forget how it ended as well. Apparently, according to the Japanese intro, Magneto commands the Brood and Cable is a pivotal character in it. So.
Oh, jeez, all right.
The Japanese intro is really cool, though.
Yeah, it's... Was this the one I liked? I think it was the first one or the second one. Because they had two.
The first one that had Cry to the Moon in Shock.
Yeah.
So, So, did this show prompt you to actually see the X-Men movies when they came out?
Well, I think seeing the show maybe lead me into the comics, and then since I was already familiar with the material once the movies came out, I'm like, yeah, that was a pretty cool show. Although, to be honest, I also watched a bit of X-Men Evolution when they were in high school, and that was a little weird, but, you know, I put up with it, because X-Men.
Is that not the one that Wolverine was the leader?
I don't recall. Nightcrawler was in it. Rogue. I think it was mostly, like a Rogue-focused show, because it was about her entering the Academy.
Oh, okay. I think I watched some of it, but I don't remember a whole lot. I didn't really watch the, like, the new series of X-Men or a new series of Spider-Man after the 90s Spider-Man, so... I just missed that stuff, I guess, or I was maybe too cynical to watch it at the time. The movies were all right, except for X-Men 3, and then there's messes afterwards, but...
I'd argue that I only liked X-Men 1 out of the trilogy. Two was okay, but one was probably just the one.
It wasn't atrocious like X-Men
3, yeah.
Spider-Man 3. But 90s superhero shows were actually pretty damn good. And if I could talk about, like, cartoons important to me, I should have actually talked about The Tick. Guys, The Tick is fantastic. 90s superhero shows were on point.
Batman. Go on about Batman.
Exactly.
We're going to hold back on
Batman,
that.
Batman the Animated Series, one of my favorite cartoons of all time.
That's
one of my favorite
really
shows of all time,
that,
period.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I could talk for hours about Batman or The Tick, so just take my word that they're good and go out and watch them. So.
Yeah, I remember watching the Superman cartoon that was in the 90s. I'm not actually a big fan of Superman, but the show was enjoyable.
Well, Superman's a bit of a dickhead, but the show that you're talking about wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
Actually, the Justice League cartoon was good, too. And that's a bit later in the period we're talking about.
We could also go on for hours about superhero shows that are still airing to this day, even.
Yeah. Batman, The Brave and the Bold, one of the best shows in recent history.
I wish I knew that was show was intended to be humorous from the start, but I was led to believe it was supposed to be like, the animated series is back, and I was like, oh.
No.
Yeah, I had been misled, but
yeah. That's
my deepest regret. Anyway... Moving on, the other show that everyone was totally going down about, you know, eating pizza, not hopefully hopping into the sewer, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Michelangelo is my favorite. Just wanted to put that out there.
Donatello was my favorite. But honestly, you're correct if you don't say Leonardo. So.
Yeah, as long as you don't say Leonardo, I think you're all right.
Like, I made a suck-calling comment about him before, and, like, I guess he's all right. Here's the thing. People like Leonardo because he had swords. He didn't get to use them a whole lot because his cartoon didn't kill people. Actually, Donatello and Michelangelo got to use the weapons the most because they had blunt weapons. But Leonardo... And, you know, it's like, yeah, I'm going to tell Splinter on you. Fuck off, Leonardo. Anyways, there's two reasons people liked Leonardo. It's because either they were a kid playing Ninja Turtles and they wanted to be the leader, or two, he had swords. Wow. Anyways.
See, I like Michelangelo because he's a party dude, and how could you go wrong with that?
Michelangelo was cool. Michelangelo was cool, and like sort of like the impetuous and party herd. But tell us a little bit about Ninja Turtles since I've been talking so much.
No, the 90s cartoon, it does get some slack because it's nothing like the original comic where all the turtles looked exactly the same and they didn't really have distinct colors and it was, you know, grimmer and darker. But you know what? The cartoon, it was aimed for kids. And as an introduction to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I thought it was pretty cool. Shredder was, I guess he wasn't as intimidating as he should have been, but the villains, they were fun. I mean, I guess it was Monster of the Week, kind of. It didn't really follow much of a plot to my recollection. I just remember it being far more sillier than what most people wanted out of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but it just came at the right time when kids were really into it.
You know, it was fun and it had a lot of personality, so I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it. I don't like people that retroactively look back and say, "Yeah, people didn't like Ninja Turtles because it was silly." No, I mean back then we loved it. I mean some people that were into the comics might not have found it copacetic, but like the kids that watched it loved it. And yes, it was a bit of monster of the week to it, but.
There's also a very 90s attitude going on it, which I guess is a setback. But again, kids enjoyed it, so.
Shredder was played by James Avery, rest in peace, who was Uncle Phil from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, King of the Fang Clan in Fist of the North Star. You know, dude's got excellent pedigree for playing roles. So, yeah, even though Krang and Shredder fought like an old married couple, they're still an interesting pair and always duplicitous. They always wanted to, you know, pull one over on the other and get the upper hand. People bemoan Rocksteady and Bebop. I thought they were fun.
It's an enjoyable cast on both sides, even though we argue about Leonardo. But again, it's overall an enjoyable cast.
Honestly, rewatching the show, you could pare down some episodes and just like separate some of the chaff from the wheat. But it was a good show, and I have fond memories of it.
It definitely was, you know, my first introduction to the franchise. So, had enough of them for the show. You know, can't go wrong from there.
Well, I mean, I did buy some comics as a kid because of the show, and they did have a different tone, but I still liked them. Because, you know, they were good, so I liked them. Seeing that the movies at the theater was fun. That's some of my earliest cinema memories. I had a Secret of the Ooze sticker book.
Just like X-Men. The first movie was great. The second movie was, I thought it was alright. Third movie
I liked Secret of the Ooze, but yeah, the first one was better. And the third one, I don't even like to really watch as a, you know, just as a thing to watch. It's not that good. I can admit that.
I mean, the third one has some interesting ideas, but then it just doesn't work.
Did you watch the Michael Bay Ninja Turtles shows?
No, I did not want to. No.
Ninja Turtles is this kind of thing where it's been through so many iterations, including ones that I don't like, that I just don't care what they do with it now.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Because I have my Ninja Turtles that I like. You have your Ninja Turtles that you like. Party C has the Ninja Turtles that they like. I don't care what they do with it, but I just haven't been able to bring myself to watch the Michael Bay Ninja Turtles. And I did watch the trailer for the new one that's coming out. It has, you know, there's Rocksteady and Bebop in it, but
I just hear Michael Bay, and I don't even want to touch it with a 10-foot pole. So.
Like, I watched the first Transformers movie, and I didn't like it. And I haven't watched the 7 that came out since. I forget how many there are, but it's a ridiculous amount. But anyways,
I did watch some of the early 2000s Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon, and that was also pretty good. I can see a lot of kids being into that as well. So
the one that ran on Fox?
Yeah, I think so. The one that had Shredder's daughter in it.
Oh, okay.
Or is that something that happened in a later season that I just happened to catch?
It might have been the later one after I stopped watching. The problem I had with that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was that the villain sucked. Like, it was this big this big buff guy called Hung or something, and basically, it was a more serious Ninja Turtles, but you can't just get by on the main characters. Your villains have to be decent as well, and for a long time they weren't, and I think that's what killed it for me. But I think it got better, but I stopped watching after maybe a season and a half. I watched all those Fox Box shows for a while because I was watching Ultimate Muscle fairly religiously. I even watched a shitty Kirby cartoon. You know.
Did you watch that crossover movie of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles where the 1990s versions meet their 2004 versions?
I've meant to, but I haven't done.
That's pretty enjoyable, actually, but I also probably had a higher tolerance for the newer cartoon than you did, so...
It's not that I didn't like the newer cartoon, it's just that I got bored of it.
No, yeah.
And it's just like, you know, I just don't care about any of the conflict in this. It's just not worth my time to watch.
So do one more show that... I don't actually recall all the kids watching this, but it's a show that both you and I can really connect with. Reboot is so good. I loved Reboot as a kid. I don't actually recall that many kids watching it with me, but, you know, I guess I was the nerd who really liked the idea of these little sprites in your computer have a life of their own, and whenever you put a game in, they have to, like, deal with it. It had a lot of wild concepts, and I guess that just made it really memorable. And then it started getting really serious, and I guess that was a bit weird, but I still kept watching it.
When it became more about Enzo as a grown-up rather than about being a mainframe. Sorry, the show might have been more popular in Canada, actually, because it is a Canadian cartoon again, and it might have just had more of a push here for that, and it was on YTV for years and years. I know it took a long time for new episodes to come out, watching it when it was starting, because it broke a lot of ground, like being a CG cartoon that, you know, ran weekly. Yeah, it was fun. It was fun for sure. You wonder who the hell's playing all these games and losing them every time, because yeah. Obviously mainframe's not full of nulls. But my main comment about Reboot is hashtag that's hexadecimal.
Oh yeah, hexadecimal.
Hexadecimal was a cool character though. She was crazy but not crazy.
Actually, I was referring to when I was talking about how it went serious too far. It was actually after the first conclusion, and then Megabyte revived himself or something. That was like season 3 or something.
It's Gigaboys?
Yeah. I think that's when the show got a little too weird, but again, I watched every episode because it was still overall enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah, it had a bit of a continuity even before it became about hopping across the internet. You know, events that happened would be referenced to and would impact the rest of the show. My favorite episode of Reboot is the one where Mike the TV joins them in a Dungeons & Dragons game.
I actually don't remember that episode, but I'm sure it was great.
It's fantastic. If you like Mike the TV, that's the episode for you.
He is a fun character. For some reason, every time I take a Reboot in the more sillier episodes, the one where there's a giant Windows logo invading them or something. Did that actually happen, or did I imagine that?
I'm not certain offhand, but something like that probably could have happened.
Yeah. And then, of course, I remember all the very plot-driven episodes, like where Enzo dies, quote-unquote.
Yeah, he gets a clone as well.
Yeah, that was a bit odd, but
that's when they format mainframe or something.
Yeah,
they
like reformat it after Megabyte's defeated. It did a lot of interesting concepts on computer terminology and how it works, and it worked. It made it in a way understandable. It made it kind of cool for kids just getting into computers since that age was coming.
It was alphanumeric.
Alphanumeric.
Yeah, definitely. It's the kind of show that it didn't talk down to you. And a lot of the shows I like are shows that don't talk down to kids. And they didn't really get into, like, computer theory. But they didn't try to mask anything that they're saying, or the terms were there for you to look up, like dot matrix and such.
Yeah.
Did you want your own glitch?
Kinda.
I come from the net, through systems, peoples, and cities, to this place, Mainframe. My format, Guardian, to mend and defend. To defend my newfound friends, their hopes and dreams. To defend them from their enemies.
So I know you talked about Samurai Pizza Cats, but there was a time when anime was really becoming part of mainstream TV. And this is where we're going to jump to the podcast. I feel like it started with Pokemon, even though Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z and probably a couple of other shows had been airing already, but Pokemon is pretty much what set it off.
Yeah, once Pokemon came out, you saw a lot of Japanese toy commercials on TV, and by that I mean things like Digimon and Monster Rancher and all that. So it did kind of bring a lot of these anime that were based on toys over, as well as other things like I think Cardcaptors was a couple of years after, and Escaflowne, I think, is at the same time period as...
Yeah, I remember Escaflowne. That's a good show.
Yeah. Actually, it was a really good show. I'd say, for me, it's a little bit different than you, because my major exposure to anime definitely started with the time that Sailor Moon came out, so a couple years before Pokemon. Like, I mean, I was aware of anime because of my older brother, so I was aware of and had watched Macross and... some of the first anime that we bought, like Macross 2 and Macross Plus and Fist of the North Star and all that. So, and Akira, among other things, 3x3 Eyes. So, like, that's the kind of stuff that really got me into anime. So I was watching some fairly good stuff at the time, but it was less accessible, I guess, when I was doing it, because... buying a VHS of anime, especially an OVA that's not sold as one set, like at Music World in Canada on VHS, it's not a cheap prospect, so you'd have to put the money aside for it, and then it was a crapshoot whether or not what you got was going to be good. Sometimes you got something that wasn't that great, but other times you got something that was really good. So as Pokemon... that time period came, that's also when the internet especially started to become much more prevalent, and it was difficult to find information on anime at the time. Like, you look at Hakuto no Ken stuff now, you'll find shitloads. Back then it was difficult to find.
Go through anything. A mailing list or something.
You find more on the Italian version, Ken Il Gero, than you would even the English version or the Japanese version. It's just wasn't there at the time, the information wasn't put out. So yeah, I'd say that it started to get really, really mainstream around the time of Pokemon, but Sailor Moon, when that was out, they made no bones that it was anime, and I remember hearing people complain that they couldn't read the signs on the buildings in the hallway at school one day, so it was acknowledged that it was from Japan, and this is when, like, Blockbuster Video had an unfortunate section, Japanimation, things like that. So it definitely got to start around that mid-90s era.
For me, it's kind of like how I had presented Samurai Pizza Cats to my experience, that it was always a cartoon that was just shown to me without context. So I had been watching cartoons from Japan for a really long time. I just never knew they were from Japan up until Pokemon really started making it obvious that, hey, these are shows coming from Japan and we're bringing them over. And that, yeah. I went with the trend. I picked up on it, and apparently I never left for some reason. But that's basically my experience. Like, there were a lot of shows. I can't really recall what most of the shows were. I guess I watched Ronin Warriors. Was that even before Pokemon? I don't know. But Like, there were just certain shows that had been brought over here that they were just presented as shows to me. So, okay, they look a bit different, but they're still some sort of animation that I can enjoy. And then, yeah, once Pokemon and Digimon and everything else that came out, I just went along with it.
It's not like 1997 happened and all of a sudden, here, this new thing called anime. I mean, people have been passionate about it since the 80s, that people that knew and had the opportunity to import. We knew that Robotech was from Japan. Maybe didn't know the full details that it was actually three shows, Frankenstein into one. But that introduced Macross to us and a lot of that stuff. And, like, Maya the Bee, if you're familiar with that old cartoon, that was actually anime, but just presented as just any other show. There wasn't the distinction made until it became en vogue to make the distinction.
Right, yeah.
Like, it was communicated in the credits of these shows what their original studios were, and again, like, from the program Jockeys on YTV, but until it became popular to, like, anime. And there were a lot of people that became quite into it at the time. They made the distinction a lot more.
It's really funny. It never really occurred to me that this was different when subtitles were on the screen. I'm like, oh, okay, it's one of those cartoons where the words are on the bottom. I need to read those. I mean, like, even shows like Speed Racer had been out for, like, ages, and yeah, I wouldn't Speed have Racer's known ancient, that yeah. was anime until, like, oh, these are where all these series have originated from.
Yeah, and like you said, if you were the kind of kid that would read the credits, and not a whole lot of kids are, say, oh, it's from Japan, that's cool.
Yeah, I was definitely not a kid who didn't read credits.
Yeah. I guess the big anime, it was Dragon Ball Z, and
yeah,
I liked Dragon Ball more, and I watched that, you know, in elementary school, and I really liked Dragon Ball. So I actually liked Dragon Ball Z, but tell us a bit about DBZ.
DBZ is a follow-up to the original Dragon Ball, where Dragon Ball is a little more lighthearted about young Goku. It's essentially based off, you know, like the child with the monkey tail, that entire Goku mythology with Sayuki. What is the name of this? The Legend of the Monkey King? There we go. Legend of the Monkey King, I got yeah. this. yeah. So it's, you know, it's a take on that with tournaments and fighting. And then Dragon Ball Z happened, where now they're aliens, and everyone has power levels. It was really ridiculous, but for some reason I watched a ton of it.
Well, a couple of my friends watched DBZ, so I would watch it when it came out, the new episode, and we'd talk about it at school, and I said, I had one friend that was really, really into it, like, super into it, that people started calling him Goku for a while. Anyways, like, he was fucking crazy about Dragon Ball Z. And just a couple of times I went over his house and we end up watching the movies all fucking night. That's back when I was a kid and had the stamina to be up the entire night with no ill effects. So wasted that time.
But you can also even sit through a Dragon Ball Z movie. Because there are a lot of bad ones out there.
Exactly, yeah. And speaking of Real Player, I remember watching a Vegeta AMV on Real Player. And saying, holy shit, when does this stuff happen? Because it was Majin Vegeta in the thing.
I remember trying to get all these, like, songs from Dragon Ball Z, playing on Real Player, like, the song that plays when Gohan goes Super Saiyan 2. That was a really good song, and they cut it out of the dub. I remember being pissed off, because I guess I was a really big nerd. Of course, that was back then. Nowadays, they'll probably keep it in, because anime is such a huge thing now, they can get away with it. But back then, I mean, they didn't have, like, the licensing properties.
You're probably waiting for weeks, like, oh, there's got to be a new episode this week. And then you turn on DBZ, the arrival of Raditz, and you're like, fuck! The arrival of Raditz. Seriously. Like, Dragon Ball Z used to be released in, like, batches of five or six episodes, and then it'd go back to the beginning of the series. That was fucking frustrating. I gave up watching the show in the Boo saga because I was frustrated that the episodes went nowhere and that we get a bunch of filler episodes translated and put out and then go back to the beginning of the series. It just got frustrating as hell.
See, I remember when I was a kid, I was kind of determined to watch all the episodes of Dragon Ball Z at one point, but the Buu saga went on for way too long that I could never do it.
Yeah, I just fell out with it. I just fell out. Anyways.
Anyway, there's an episode where Goku and Piccolo learn how to drive, so that's really important.
that's a good one, yeah. It's not Link and Zelda, but it's
Piccolo and Goku. It's just as good. Like I say, the Cell Saga is probably my favorite. That was a really good part of the series for me. And then because of Buu Saga, it just goes on forever, so yeah.
You hurt me with two punches. The hell is course.
Yeah, okay, so. The androids were cool, though.
Yeah, for some reason, Krillin marries one. And what was the clown like android? He's like, yes, 20. He was my favorite.
Android 19, I think.
Was it 19?
Yeah.
he was cool.
Because 16 was the peaceful one, and then 17 and 18 were the siblings. So yeah, 19 had to have been the clown one.
Do you like the Ginyu Force and the Raccoon Boom and?
they were entertaining, I guess. Frieza Saga was, I don't know. Sometimes I'm amazed I got through the Frieza Saga.
Yeah. Oh, Dragon Ball Z.
There's so much to say about Dragon Ball Z, but we should really cut it here.
So, I guess that concludes anime. It put you down a dark, dark road.
So, One Punch Man.
One Punch Man. I mean, we're talking about nostalgic shows, but I'm already nostalgic for One Punch Man because I want to watch it again. You read the manga recently. This just as an aside. We didn't talk about this in the intro, but
I should have, I guess. But you know what? Now it's relative, so I can talk about how I read all of the manga. I'm going to get to the webcomic now. But yeah. Yeah, I read every chapter of the manga that's out, and man, that art is really something. It's really good, especially Sonic's art.
Yeah. Does he get gelled in the dick in the comic? I forget.
Yeah, he still does.
Yeah.
It still does that, like, segue, like, please wait or something.
Do they get to Blizzard of Hell in the manga? They must.
Yeah, yeah.
King in the Blizzard of Hell. They're fairly important characters that didn't make it into the anime yet.
I'm sure that it's gained enough popularity that we'll have a season 2. They're just waiting for more chapters to adapt.
It might not be till 2017, though, I think.
Yeah, which is fine. They can take their time because they'll have more episodes. I mean, they'll have more chapters to adapt. It'll be great.
You find yourself putting on a pair of red gloves and scrunching them like in the intro and shouting One Punch.
One Punch! And then like guitars blare.
Yeah. Oh, what a good show. What a good show. You know what, anime? You might have given us like fucking Chobits and shit like that, but you gave us One Punch Man. Good on you, anime. And good on you, manga and webcomics.
Yeah, this is not really a way to wrap this up, except we had a really good childhood, I guess. Yeah, I mean, we have a lot more to say, but we should probably end it before we go on for a really long time. I mean, there are obviously other shows we could have discussed, but we don't want this cast to be 4 hours long or more. Gone off for hours about Power Rangers when I first saw it, and when that started happening, but again, this cast is going on for really long. But thank you for listening to our cast. If you want to get in contact with our horse, it's twitter.com/agrocast, AGROCST. Matt, where can we reach you?
You can reach me at twitter.com/mattazoic, MATTOZOIC. It's like the Mesozoic era, except dinosaurs are better. The website's the same, mattazoic.com. I always say I should have new content, but I should actually have new content soon.
You can have your Dinobot and Rat Trap fanfic.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't want to get an AO rating on my website. Well, Chris, where can we find you?
You can reach me at twitter.com/Karasu, C-A-W-R-A-S-U. I'm featuring an anime boy on my icon, so I guess that's relevant to whatever we were discussing, right? So what are we talking about next month, Matt, before we go off about more cartoons?
next month we are doing something very adventuresome, something that changes every time you do it, something that has a name that is a point of contention between people, something that is either strictly defined or loosely defined, something that takes place in a long procedurally generated dungeon, typically, something that is similar to a game called Rogue. We are going to talk about roguelikes.
What a surprise. I mean, I was trying to piece together the mystery, but yeah. I think that makes sense. Yeah, well, so yeah. If you thought we talked enough about Crawl, well, too bad if we talk about it some more.
Yeah, we'll discuss just the appeal of roguelikes, and we'll talk about a couple of roguelikes that we played. I mean, you've talked about a bunch of them recently. I've talked about a bunch of them recently. We'll talk about roguelikes. So this is time to do a podcast about roguelikes.
It's time to stop putting all that information in the intro and actually make a full cast about it.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see. Is it going to be a pretentious podcast about what a roguelike has to be? Or is it going to be a fun podcast about roguelikes that we like to play? We'll find out in a month.
Cheers.
Cheers.
It's fun imagining being a movie star or rock and roll idol. All that attention, money, and fame. But it's no good trying to be somebody you're not. What makes a real star isn't about fame or money, but being the best person you can be and feeling good about yourself. Be a star in your own life. That's where it really counts. Right, Luna?
You said it. If you'd only practice what you preach, Serena.